Welcome back to another episode of North of Samara. I am the private one, as you can see today by my attire. Tutu. I am joined by the hairless one.
We try to bring that
Valentine.
Up.
Yes, because last time we recorded you in a durag, and today, you know, you're penury. So
yeah, Zuda life.
That what happened to the Driz, man? What happened?
Bruh, it just got expensive, man. Like, I had to remind myself I live in Zimbabwe. I'm bougie, but not that bougie. Like, come on.
No, I feel you, man. I feel you. You got to do what you got to do sometimes. The hair care is especially now that I have to go experiment with a few haircuts this past summer. So it becomes very, very expensive to kind of maintain all that.
Yeah, but you're in the greener pastures, though. Like, you're in the diaspora, so, yeah, you guys can do whatever you like. We're in the...
I know, dude, that's a first world problem, yeah. That definitely is a first world problem. Okay, so today we are talking about two aliens in sports.
Yeah, yeah.
Two people, at least, who've been aliens for a very long time.
Yeah, the Statman. I guess at this point, if you don't know what we're talking about, Messi and Ronaldo, this is obviously brought on by Messi's move to PSG. And, well, from my perspective, it's pretty much just a look back, like as to what these niggas have achieved, like in the time they've done it. I was watching this, I think it's a BT Sports sort of podcast or something. Where Rio Ferdinand was talking to Jadon Sancho, and he was like, when Ronaldo came to United, he was like flicks and tricks. He just, he was the, you know, very flair player, flamboyant, but he was able to convert that into numbers, like in the most efficient way. And he asked him, like, so what are you going to do? He's like, yeah, I'm coming with a bit of flair. But I'm going to want to start, you know, cause he's a 15 goals, 11 assists kind of guy. So the numbers aren't the problem. I think it's just the adjustment to the league. But the numbers aren't the problem. But that made me look at Ronaldo. I'm like, Jesus. Didn't dude average 50 goals for like 6 seasons straight or something crazy like that?
Dude, it's like the honestly, man, when you go through his history chronologically, it's just he went at United, like you're saying, from flair and tricks to like then, you know. Like, it's well documented how much of a nightmare he was those first couple of years. But it was the kind of thing where his body had to catch up, and then he had to kind of become more efficient at it. And then he became more efficient at scoring. And yeah, he did average 50. It was like he was scoring, he scored 50 goals for like 5 consecutive seasons or something. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I remember. Back at Johns, when we're talking about Ronaldo when he played striker, and we all hated it. Like, why are you playing him up front with Rooney? Like, play him on the left where he's probably most effective.
Yeah. But
Lex probably saw something we didn't. And I was like, no. When we started seeing the headers going in, I know when I started seeing those headers going in, I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe Mdada's got it. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's because Lex brought up the, like, at least I understood his madness after the fact. He brought up a point in one of his books saying that Ronaldo had this ability to create 3 chances every game. And I was like, and then you like replay all the games in your mind and you're like, that is true. That is very, very true. Because I think at some point he started as a center forward or something like that. And then, you know, they moved him to wing at United because that's where his talents were going to be most useful. But he's always had like this forward instinct of creating chances. Like that's his thing, man. Like he creates a ton of chances and it always looks like he's just waffling, but he's just kind of, it became a thing where he's finding the range. Like a shooter who's just finding, you know, like in the NBA where he's like, you know, a shooter just finding the range like KD. And then as soon as he finds it, then bam, you know, then he's, you know, he's locked on it. And that's what Ronaldo was like, man. So I think Lex saw that. The only thing is that our United team was not really built to take advantage of that, at least in the final, because we needed more productive wingers and we needed a defensive, you know, a midfield that functioned very fluidly. Instead, we had, you know, Park and Carrick, and sometimes we had Fletcher. It's not really a fluid midfield, you know, it's just there to do a specific job. And then on the wings, you don't really have wingers, you have strikers playing wings. So the team wasn't designed the way the Real Madrid teams were designed, for example. You know, those Real Madrid teams were designed to specifically get the most out of him as an attacking forward, or as a striker, sorry.
That. I remember that final in Rome. I was very upset. He had Berbatov and Tevez on the bench. And I was like, he could literally would have moved Cristiano to the left. And we could have won that game. But the way the team was set up throughout the season, it's kind of like the Wembley final. Was it 2010? Wembley final. When Rooney played up top. And what you're saying kind of came to fruition because there was no production around him to get the best out of him. Because when he scored that goal, that was literally him making that shot. It wasn't a case of someone supplying him with a ball. That was literally like if we were going to make NBA comparison, someone like Bradley Beal, who is a good spot-up shooter, but can also create space to make up his own shot. So I think that was the biggest hurdle that Lex never really could overcome. The ability to understand that in football, some of these players need productive players around them. And Ronaldo never got that towards the latter part of his United tenure, which I feel is one of the reasons that made after his 46 goal season at United. That's when that season after, I think he had an injury coming into the season, and he was just jaded. Like he was like a not a fan of himself, but he was just super jaded.
People forget that. A lot of United fans forget that, man. That last year he was a nightmare, bro. He was so, because he wanted to leave for Real Madrid. That's the reason why, because he wanted to leave for Real Madrid that summer. End of that summer, after he won the Champions League. And then Lex went and talked to him and said, nah, chill one more year and then you'll go, you'll be the most expensive player or whatever. But he was just a very, very annoying version of the player we saw a season ago, that whole year. Like, just, he was so worried and he was had injuries, and that's why Lex kept dropping him. And that's when you knew the writing was on the wall, but he was really just ready to go, you know. But, you know, the thing that always amazed me about Ronaldo was is just his progression, you know, like just how hard it's one of those things, at least before comparing them, is like the whole thing was that Ronaldo molded himself into this. You hear stories about him as a kid at Manchester and used to go to this place for like, you know, specific training. And this guy was saying like Ronaldo would come in every day trying to work on this about his body and this about his physique and stuff. And then they'll be like, after, in between practice or whatever, you'll be somewhere alone behind the stands doing, you know, dribbling with weights on his ankles and stuff and just working on things on his own. And it's like, you know, you hear things like that and you're like, you know, this guy really, really just went to the extra mile, man, just to become the greatest. Like, it was something that he worked extremely hard for. And you can see the way he plays, it's all a process for him. Like the way he mastered the thing that amazed me the most was when he mastered his technique in finishing. Like it got better year after year after year. And there's a goal against Arsenal where he finished with his left foot at Highbury. And I was just like, that is an incredible finish. There's something that I've seen in Greenwood now, but that's Greenwood's a whole nother topic we'll get to later. But, you know, Ronaldo, like that, his finishing got way better and better. And it got to a point where now it's still the case now where you're like, oh, if he gets a chance, he's scoring. Like, it's like he's one of those guys now where you're like, he just needs to find the range. Once he gets there, if he gets a chance in the box, you give him an opening, he can make it go out of nothing.
Yeah, true that. True that. Yeah, his finishing did progressively improve because he was kind of, he had the screamers in him, the long ranges in him because of the power developing his shot. But then it became more focused into being able to finish inside the box. I remember when he missed an open goal. It was a Blackburn or something when he missed an open goal and he beat himself about it. It is what it is, but like you could see that it kind of showed the direction, that frustration showed the direction where he was going. Because the normal wingers, when they miss, is kind of like, yeah, okay, you know, I would never usually find myself in this position. Let me look sort of upset for the cameras, but you know, but for a person who's really going for those numbers or for a goal or trying to show that their work has gone to a certain level, yeah, he definitely showed it. And I was watching the Happy Hour podcast from like, I think 4 months ago, 3 months ago, when Ben Foster was talking about what it was like to train with Ronaldo. Well, that was the title of the video, because even the guys were like, "Yeah, yeah, you know, it's content." When we mentioned Ronaldo, he's obviously going to be the title, and I was like, "Yeah, okay, fair enough."
Yeah.
So Ben Foster obviously started jizzing about Scholes, saying he was in goalkeeper practice, and the goalkeeper's coach was shooting at him, and then he saw Scholes take a ball at the half volley, a crossfield ball at the half volley, and redirect it wide to the right wing, and his mouth was gaping, and the trainer was like, "Scholesy," he's like, "Yep." He's like, "Ah, bruh, don't worry." And this was one of his first training sessions. He was like, "Yeah, don't worry. You'll see this every day. This is nothing new." This only understood that the level that United was at, and I think even more so with Ronaldo. Because when you mentioned his training, he's like, "Anzi, we invited to this Christmas get together when the team went out, and Ronaldo said he wasn't going to go because he doesn't drink." So he's like, that's the kind of guy he was. Like, he was, I'm not going to like insult him by saying he's not talented. He's definitely talented. He wouldn't have made it this far, but I think he understood that he needed to work hard, which he did, to make his to reflect his talent. So that makes sense. But in terms of the way he, like LeBron James-esque, paid attention to his body, rode the wave of sports science to get the very best out of it as it evolved. Hence why these guys are still playing in their 30s. If this was players from a generation before, yeah. Like Giggs, you could see Giggs was slowing down. Like he wasn't the player. But these guys still relatively occupy the same positions, playing at the same efficiency, not at the same pace. I wouldn't say, you know, when they were in their late 20s or even early 20s. But I think they're playing football, they mind a lot more. But Ronaldo's hard because his physique is still very impressive. Like he's still pulling off those crazy ass jumps, and you're like, bruh, like you're 30 some, you're mid 30s, bruh. Like, should you really be doing this? So it was good to hear Ben Foster saying, yeah, no, the guy literally has a strict code, and he didn't agree with it because he was like, for me, it's not a black and white. Like, I can't have this or I can't have that. To his credit, he said, like, I cycle and I train a lot, so alcohol really isn't a problem because I burn a lot of calories anyway, which, you know, respect. But he said for Ronaldo, it wasn't something he was contemplating. And I think it's a psychological thing where you're like, I won't let anything distract me. I don't know what this thing will do to me. So I might as well not even entertain it, which... Yeah, I kind of get. I understand to a degree.
Nah, no, I kind of get that. You know, some athletes are like that, you know. But, you know, here's the thing about these two that's like so freaky. It's like, and it comes back to like how Messi won his International Cup on the same day. Like, on the same day that Ronaldo did 4 years ago or something. And, you know, and then you start going back at the history of it all, and like you realize that these guys, their whole careers, they've been tied together. Because Ronaldo came on the scene first, but he took a little bit of time to get going, whereas Messi was almost instantaneous. You know, Messi was like, he got into the squad in 2004, in 2005, the next year he was almost a regular player, and then started just, you know, he had a whole bunch of injuries that slowed him down. I remember that in the beginning. And then, you know, there was that hat trick he had against Madrid that got everybody on notice that season. That was one of the great, great seasons he had, that before he blew up. And he has a goal against Celtic. That was incredible as well. And there's a Getafe one where, you know, there's so many messy goals. You're just sitting there like, dude, that's when you understood that where Ronaldo was through sheer hard work. This Messi guy was literally like Zidane, like Ronaldinho. Like, this was all a natural talent. Like, literally just comes natural to him. And it's not that Messi doesn't work out or anything, because I think as he's gotten older, you see the work that has gone into his physique, how he plays the game, the way he thinks the game as well. That all plays a part into it. That's kind of been molded over time. But the natural ability, bruh, in the beginning, those beginning years, man. And they were so intertwined together, because when Ronaldo was playing, when Ronaldo was winning cups with United, Messi was kind of injured a little bit, right? And so Ronaldo was in this perfect team that was kind of succeeding, whereas Messi was, that was at the end of Rijkaard's years, and Rijkaard was, you know how it is with Barcelona coaches at the end of their tenure, bruh. It's never peaceful. It's always just the worst situation. Like, the team is just in disarray. So you know, all of that was happening while, you know, Ronaldo, for Messi, while Ronaldo was winning. And then Messi got Pep, you know, and then Messi got that, his own version of Fergie and his own version of a team that had structure and that had discipline and all this great coaching and all this, that's a culture around him, winning culture. And then, you know, Pep said, I'm going to put this guy in the center and we're going to demolish teams this way. And, you know, it was just like when you watch them, and it was especially when shit got real between these two, when Ronaldo came to Spain, that's when I started to see that these guys pushed each other, man. Like it was a subtle thing that you never noticed. And the media used to make this whole thing about them being a rivalry. And in the beginning years, it really looked like they didn't like each other. But it was a thing. It was one of those respect things, you know, like Jordan and Kobe kind of thing. Like where they both understood how good they were. They both understood, even till now, like there's a quote now where there's quotes from both of them where they're talking about how, you know, us being at this level, it's only two of us. You know, like Messi was asked who were the best players in the world and like I discount. And he said Neymar, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, what about Cristiano? He's like, I discount Cristiano like myself. You know, and Ronaldo said a quote where he said, he's like, there's only two players, you know, in the world at this level, it's just me and him. How many players do you know in the world who are at this level for this long, for 10 years? Just me and him. And it's like a mutual kind of respect rivalry thing between them. And you look at their careers, man. Like, remember I told you, like, remember Messi when that alien year, that ridiculous year where this guy decided to score 91 goals in a year, in a calendar year. Like, I think people don't understand how ridiculous that is. Like, 91. Like, there are people who have not scored 91 goals in their entire careers. Beckham has 85 goals for Manchester United. 85 goals. That's what we're talking about here. You know, and obviously different positions and different whatever. But, you know, even in context, like, Rude has scored 100 and I don't know how many goals for Manchester United. You know what I mean? And then there's 91 goals. So this guy was like, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, man. And then the season afterwards, Messi got kind of injured and whatever, and Ronaldo went off for 3 years. For 3 years, he went off like he never forgot. And there's the one, you remember the interview, the movie he did where he was talking about how, you know, losing the Ballon d'Or kind of, you know, irked him.
Yeah, it irked him on to then do like a lot better. And like, you're right, I think people took the rivalry as being personal when it was more professional. I'm trying to get a basketball reference because I remember watching The Last Dance and I kind of got the same vibe from Jordan. He wasn't in the same league, but the way Jordan described Scott Stockton, where the respect is there, like that's the best way in terms of describing respect, that it was there. He knew Stockton was a bad man. Like it wasn't even a thing. It wasn't like the Clyde Drexler thing when he knew. No, y'all are underrating me severely by comparing me to this dude. The respect had been there for a very long time. And I think what we saw was not more personal, but more two people just vibing on another level. Just like, okay, yeah, we're direct opposition, but the only way I'm going to get better is to match you season after season. Ronaldo was never able to match Messi when it came to goals per season because that was ridiculous. That you know, I hate saying cannot be done again because I always remember Michael Schumacher saying, yeah, I won 7 world titles, but records are there to be broken. Possibly could be done probably in our lifetime, probably later on, but I don't see that happening. But Ronaldo,
they both have 5 Ballon d'Ors each, man. I don't think people get that. They both have 5 Ballon d'Ors each. Insane. Like, come on, man.
It's insane. It's weird. It's weird that we are the old Ballies now. Like, trying to tell kids, like, before Messi and Ronaldo, there was a time where it was strange for someone to win it back to back. Like, it was strange. Like, the winners, like guys like Pavel Nedved, Ronaldo, not Cristiano, but Ronaldo de Lima, guys like Zidane winning it, Ronaldinho, Kaká, the people who, like, they won it once. And that whole winning it once is a whole procession. Doing it twice, I think Ronaldinho won it back-to-back, I think. Those are the anomalies.
Yeah, I think he was the first one, yeah.
To win it back-to-back.
One of the first, but he was the most recent one, yeah. He was the most recent one.
Yeah, so it's one of those anomalies that you're like, yeah, do you guys realize that two players dominating the world's biggest sport? Let's not even get it twisted. Football.
Oh, wait, no. So Dino, sorry. So Dino didn't. No, he won 1 year.
And then
Shevchenko won the other year.
And then he won the year of it.
I think he won the year after that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So even before then, it was really strange to see someone do it back to back. And then when Messi and Ronaldo did it for a decade plus, it's kind of like, guys, like, and it's not to say, okay, these guys are exceptional footballers, but we've seen exceptional footballers. Like, we've seen really, really, really good footballers. And these guys are like, you know, fuck that. I want to rewrite the whole script. Like, we're going to legit rewrite the whole script. And Ronaldo won his, when he did a three-peat with the Champions League, I think that was his answer. So, like, yeah, individually, I might not be able to crack that record, you know, that Golden Goose record. But in terms of achievement and accolades, yeah, let me run it back to Inter Milan. Because I think, weren't they the first team to win it back-to-back since that Inter team in the 40s or 30s or something that had done it before? Or was it not? I'm not sure. But it had been a really long time.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think it might have been Inter, I think.
It had been a really long time since someone had taken the... And it was the curse of the Champions League, that winning it the year before, you're going to either get knocked out in the group phase or in the first round, in the first knockout round. And they did it again.
There is a curse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they did it again and again. And Ronaldo, to his credit, might not have started in the finals in the way that people wanted him to. I mean, like what Messi did to us at Wembley and in Rome. But I mean, in the sense that he dragged that team literally to the finals. Not
3 years in a row, bro. Yeah. No. I mean, the team was constructed very perfectly around him. It worked in unison, and it is a team game. But it was constructed to be able to make sure that he got the goals when the chances were created. Mm. And he came through every single time. Every time they needed a goal, he was there. And that's who Ronaldo is, which kind of brings me into my segment, or at least something that I wanted to ask. Like, what is your, if you had to pick a top moment with Ronaldo, what would you pick for you that like resonated with you?
For me. It's the one goal that I celebrated like no other goal. I don't celebrate goals. I'm like, oh yeah, cool. Yeah. One goal, good. That goal against Porto.
Oh, you're one of those fans. Oh, yeah. You're one of those fans.
That goal against people. Porto.
Enjoy sports, my first one.
There are two goals that made me celebrate. It's the Rooney goal against City. The overhead. I went ballistic. I didn't see that shit coming. And then the Ronaldo goal against Porto. That, like, it's almost as good as the Arsenal one. He scored in the Champions League. That free kick. But the Porto goal was, yeah, this is going in. Like, even when it went, I stood up and I was like, that's in. Like, there is no fucking way that is going to miss. Like, that is in. And that was the moment where I realized, you know he's a world-class player. But it's kind of like LeBron taking the... that ridiculously weird Cavaliers team all the way to the finals. It was that moment that he can do what he wants. Like, as long as he's on the pitch, this guy does what he wants. That's that moment. And yours?
Man, I preach about this one all the time. It was the 2000, and it was a qualifier for the World Cup in 2014. And they were playing Sweden, and it was like a must-win game. Like, they had to win that game.
Yeah.
And man, when I tell you, man, when I tell you that is the most clutch, one of the most clutch, maybe the most, if I'm really just being, you know, hyperbole about it, the most clutch performance I've seen on a football pitch. Like, dude, that game, man, it wasn't even about, it's the quality of goals that he scored, man. The quality that they were all high quality finishes. Like, some of them with a degree of difficulty for at least, I think, two of them was incredible. One of them was with his left foot, I believe, as well. Like, dude, it was incredible. I remember just, and it was the time we was doing that, me, I did this, that celebration.
Yeah.
It was the coolest shit ever, dude, ever. Like, it was a clutch game. It was written in a movie, dude. It was a clutch game for the World Cup. Must win. He must score. He's the only one that can score. He must score. And it was also a 10th game. Like, there were 2-2 or something. It was 2-2. And then he scored a clutch goal late in the game to win it all. And then went to the fans and said, this is me. I was like, dude, this is, I remember posting, because I didn't really post about football back then, but I remember posting that saying, just CR7 appreciation post. Because I wish you could bring out those highlights, man, just to show the people. Because if you're watching and if you're listening, just look them up, man. 2014 or 13, Portugal versus Sweden. That hat trick, Dude, that's the one that resonated with me the most, because that was when I was like, yo, this man, he can drag this team for sure. And, you know, he literally lifted them, put them on his back, and just took them to the World Cup. Literally took them to the World Cup.
Yeah, definitely. That was like Giggs against, was it Greece? Oh, not Giggs, Beckham against Greece. Where, you know what? It's going to.
Weight of the world on your shoulders and you deliver.
Yeah, and he didn't buckle. And that was the time when he was not the most liked person in football. You know how England fans are, massive expectations. They want you to, you know, move heaven and earth. And it was weird that Beckham was that player in their golden generation. But for Ronaldo to do something similar, and again, to United, or former United number sevens, I think that jersey is kind of, it's a blessing and a curse. And that if you're really good in it, yeah, you're really good in it. If you're Valencia, well, you know what it is.
That's why you came. look at what we did. We revived Cavani's career. Cavani was seen as dead wood, and then he put that seven shirt on, and now everybody calling him world class. That's a whole different conversation.
Yeah. So Messi, ask the same question for Messi. What was your, I won't say breakthrough moment, but the one moment that made you remember that this nigga is the shit? Like, we forget, we both forget that Messi does some of this crazy shit because we're used to it. But like, that moment that reminded you that, okay.
Dude, the thing about it is that with Messi, there's too many moments. There's way too many moments, but there's so many moments. Like, Pep talked about how the thing that's most underrated about him is his passing. He will hit a pass that you just like, how? But okay, I think the moment that resonates with me, to answer your question, is, I think it's the year. Let me say it's the year. Not the year, no. There's one highlight that there's a few highlights. I'm just going to talk about a few highlights. There's the game against Zaragoza. Real Zaragoza. And it was 2010, I believe. And it was a game that, there's a goal he scored where he won the ball. And there was a tangle with the defender or something. And then he went, dragged this way, boom, came back in, went back outside, scored. And the whole bench is going like this. Like, the commentary was losing their minds. The bench was losing their minds. I think Henry was talking about it as one of the great goals he's ever seen. That for me, whenever I see that highlight, I'm like, this guy was great for a long time. But the recent game as well that reminded me of it was the game against Madrid. Where was it? The game against Madrid where Casemiro elbowed him at the Bernabeu. And then you had like a bloody thing. He had a bleeding lip. He had a cut lip or whatever. And so for like the whole first half, he was walking and he was running around with like paper tissue or something, or like gauze in his mouth because he was bleeding. And he put on an absolute show. Like, he went back, like, he was untouchable after that. Something woke up and literally scored the first goal, quieted the crowd. The game was a little whatever. And then in the 90th whatever minutes, last kick of the game, scores the clutch goal, takes his shirt off in the Bernabeu, turns it around and shows the crowd. It says, look right here. I did this. You know, it's the coolest photo ever. The coldest photo ever.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the game. I remember I called you and I'm like, he's the greatest of all time. That's how epic that moment was. And you can't say that about football, but in that moment, for the however long it lasted, he was the greatest footballer that ever lived in that moment. It was such an epic moment, and it reminded the entire world, and he's been doing it his whole career. Every time people doubt him, especially with the same thing with Ronaldo, every time people doubt them, they remind you that, no, there's levels to this. There's always levels to this. Like the show Messi put on, like, for example, Ronaldo's show against Atletico for Juventus. Remember that?
Yeah.
When they lost at Atletico, they didn't win Atletico, and Simeone was chatting shit, and the Atletico players were chatting shit, and you're telling them, I got 5 Champions Leagues, and I have one of them, 2 of them against you. I know how to beat you. Like in his mind, you're saying, like, I know how to beat them. And then he went and put on an absolute show in Turin and knocked them out, you know? And then there's Messi, you know, who against, you know, again, he lost that game, but the show he put on against Liverpool, the first leg, like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then the free kick, like,
yeah, Messi's free kicks again, one of his more underrated qualities. I've said this for years that he stole Ronaldinho's free kick technique.
The two step
lean back, I saw that. The curl.
Yeah,
because when the first time he took a free kick, I'm like, that's Dinho. Like, even the arc of the ball, I'm like, that's Dinho. Like, there was some conversations. Was Dinho have copyrighted that shit? I'm like, bruv, you know what? Yeah, you're not the greatest, but yeah, I'm copywriting that shit. Every goal you score, 10% of your match-winning bonus. You know what it is. Streets gotta eat. For me, the moment I realized I forgot. I didn't forget. I kind of... The moment that reminded me that this nigga was a bad motherfucker. It wasn't even a goal. Is when he sat down Milner at the Camp Nou.
Oh, Jesus. That's the one.
Ooh.
That's the one. That's the one, because I remember Pep was in the crowd, and I always remember that for Pep just being.
What's crazy is that they panned the camera to the dude. I'm like, were you guys waiting for this? Like, was the cameraman really targeting Pep the whole game just to gauge his reaction? Because I felt like that. Because when I saw his reaction,
I was really
I was like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, we did. But my E, was watching it in a dorm or in a common room back in uni. My E, they didn't end. And the guys replay that shit. I think we're watching it on Bein Sports with, you know, that guy in his commentary. What's his name? I forgot the dude. And his commentary made it worse.
Like, Charles.
No, not Charles. The guy from Manzanuri, from Bein Sports, the white dude with his magisterial, forgot his name. Something Taylor, I think. His commentary just made it worse. And Barca supporters that day were just, they were insufferable. I think insufferable is the right term. It was almost as bad as when he sat down Jerome Boateng, which I think Jerome has never recovered from that. I think his FIFA rating started dipping after that moment. Because, that was nasty.
Boateng, that was embarrassing. The Milner one was always funny because I remember texting like VZ saying, like, with that video saying, Pep is David just saying, oh. Dude, like he cartooned. He was nutmegging a lot of it. He had a Fernandinho nutmeg that game as well.
Mm.
But that's the one I remember that was replayed over and over and over and over again, bro. Like, Milner had to leave clubs, bro.
Yeah, there was no recovery from that.
Leave clubs, man, and go get back and just start new. And his career has never looked, he's never been better since he left.
Yeah. Still never been the fit for him. But in terms of tandems, I think between Messi and Ronaldo, Messi was probably the best. I'm not going to say Ronaldo was not as good in terms of bringing out the best out of his teammates, because I think he did an understated job in terms of just giving them enough confidence. There's a difference when you've got a player you know you're playing with.
He did it in different ways than Messi did, yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll be a fair comparison to say in terms of numbers of assists and whatnot. But Ronaldo, I think the high level of demand that he put, so it's kind of like Michael Jordan and LeBron. Ronaldo is Michael Jordan in this respect, in terms of his presence was all you needed to know that you were good. He trained like better and better every season to maintain his physique. If you were young and coming to the club, you'd obviously see a 30-something old guy training like it's his first training session. You'd obviously think, yeah, you know what? If I slack here, it'll be pretty much obvious because the star's doing this. Messi on the other hand, I think he was more of the LeBron James. He will run it. Like after Iniesta and Xavi retired, he then, like what you were saying before, his passing. Dude, him and Jordi Alba had a telepathic relationship I've never been able to understand. Mm. Him and Dani Alves. You just reminded me. Dani Alves had this, I was on TikTok, forgive me, I have an addiction. But there was this thing about Dani Alves where he was like, Pep used to always be upset at me when I brought the ball back to Messi. Like, you're not progressing the ball forward. And he's like, no, mister. Listen, if Messi doesn't have the ball, he then gets disenchanted. He switches off out of the game. Gotta make sure the guy has the ball at his feet most times. That is why their partnership worked so well. Again, Danny Alves is one of the most underrated right backs to play football. That guy is ridiculous. And when I went over the highlights just to check what he was talking about, my 1-2s, bro. Like,
bro, there's a goal they scored. I don't remember what year it was, where they literally 1-2'd the way from like just outside the halfway line. Or like not, but like maybe 10 or 15 meters inside the halfway, inside the half, all the way to the goal. Like it was, their understanding for each other was incredible. And I can see why. It's because Alves understood that you have to feed Messi the ball, otherwise he sees fire. Mm. And I know, I think the team, or at least before he left, De Jong was the one who understood that the most. Like Frankie was the one who kept feeding it. But it's a thing, man. Their understanding, him and Alves, was just, it was incredible.
Yeah, he was, I can't imagine a better partnership in terms of star players on the same sort of wing. I think it was the same combination with Messi and Iniesta or Xavi when he was playing the false nine, that they just got each other. Like, they understood what they needed to do. And I think Dani Alves kind of carried that over to be like, yeah, no, listen, if you're the best out of this guy, check it to his feet. He's smart enough to know what to do with the ball. And I just need to know how to make the runs. And it evolved his game as a right back. In so many ways, his assist, like his cutback pass, like the way he'd understand the way the defense moved to bring the ball into a channel, got even scarier when I think Suarez came. But even before that, he was super efficient in where to place the ball. He made sure he was in the right place at the right time. And it makes your job easier, especially when you got like Iniesta and Xavi playing in midfield. It just makes everything fluid. I think that's why they were so indomitable for a very long time. It's because the players understood each other on an atomic level to know what they needed from one another. So there was a level of comfort. I actually wouldn't blame them for like the Fergie speech, lads, it's just Spurs, it's just Tottenham. I wouldn't blame them if they walked into every game like that, because they knew each other to a degree that it's I don't know if it's ever reproducible, that very great Barcelona team with the way Messi, especially his move to right wing, which I was like, that was the best decision they ever made for him. Because again, football's an arms race, and they figured it out that nah, we can trap him if he plays false nine. We can just make midfield a lot harder for him to navigate through. Listen, we're not going to stop him. Like, we're not going to stop. We're just going to make it hella hard for him to get by. But then when he moved back to right wing, that was a masterstroke. And I think that's when this whole inverted wingers nonsense started, where, you know, it became fashionable again to play a 4-3-3 with kind of forward wingers who didn't traditionally do the whole defending. And I think Sergio Busquets helped with that as well, because, again, super intelligent footballer. People don't speak about him enough. He made that team work, and I probably made Messi feel comfortable. There's nothing more in a game than to know that you got a holding mid who's got your back. Like the way he used to drop between, I think,
Busquets had his back, bro. Remember the goal against Madrid in the Champions League where Busquets literally controlled the ball and and Messi came and took it from him. You know, because Messi was in the area. It was one of those games where Messi was in the mood saying, nah, just give me the ball and get the fuck out of the way. And Busquets controlled a pass and, you know, just literally put his foot down. And Messi came, took the ball, went past 1, 2, 3, 4, goal. You know, like, goal. It was, you know, Messi, he's got those goals, you know, that's where you're sitting there, just, you're asking yourself, what did I just watch? Like the one that just popped in my mind, is the goal against Nigeria at the World Cup. I don't remember which World Cup it is. That ball that came across and then it was boom. Control on the thighs. Control on the foot. Goal. What? What?
Ridiculous.
Dude. Ridiculous. We had to replay that goal so many times. We're like, yo, do people understand what happened here? Like, it was insane. Till this day, I still, like, touch, goal. Like, that is the most difficult ball to control, and he killed it with his thigh. With his thigh.
That's some like, shit.
Dude, that is Henri shit, exactly. Like, people think that's generational. That's generational talent. Like, everybody used to understand the thing about Thierry Henry, that thing people don't, at least now I hope they do. Thierry Henry was a freakish athlete. A freakish athlete. That shit was natural to him. That one was on some podcast or whatever with Gary Neville, said that he didn't really train in the gym. He just wanted to get better as a striker. Everything he did was all it was that gift came from God. It's the same thing with Messi. His first touch came from God, bruh. That was nothing that he worked on. That was there from the beginning. His first touch is immaculate, and it's been that way since day one.
Yeah. Messi, again, it's the way the ball was always stuck to his foot. I think he understood that the only way to really be unmarkable is to move in very short bursts and to change direction quickly and to never do the classical winger thing that we saw from like the Cristianos, Robinhos, Quaresma, Figo, you know, the classic wingers where they would kick the ball ahead like the Rashford, kick and chase. Nah. He would draw you in because if he's coming up with a ball, he's not giving you an option. You can't sit back because the more you sit back, the more you drop the offside trap.
Exactly.
So you got to push up. So by the time you push up and get into proximity, you got two choices. You're going to foul him or you're going to go after him. And by the time you want to go after him, he's already picked where he wants to go. He's already picked which side you're leaning on. And the freakish thing about Messi and even to Henry to an extent is even though he's on the ball, he's still conscious of the rest of the pitch. Like, I don't know. I've never seen that nigga look up.
Mm.
Maybe a glance. Maybe a glance. But the pitch does not stay static the way it does. Again, I revert to the Jordi Alba telepathic relationship. He knew where to put the ball, even though he was in front of two defenders or three defenders, where to place the pass, where to put the ball into the channel, even as players were moving. You know that LeBron, that fake pass he did. I don't remember which game it was. Where he got
the ball. Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and then faked the ball one way and then chucked it the other. And I don't know what the hell was there. And I was like, okay. That's messy. That's basically that's what it is. And it's situational awareness on a level I've never been able to understand. I think Henri had a similar kind of thing where for him it was, for me, that's when I began to understand what a 9.5 is. Like someone who is as effective with their back to the defense as they are running at the defense or off the shoulder, and as well as they are creating chances for other players.
Yeah, which is what Henri was, yeah.
Yeah, he was really ridiculous. Didn't he start at the left wing or something like that? When I remember watching the 98 World Cup, and when my dad called him Henry, and I didn't even know how to pronounce his fucking name, I just called him Henry too. This weird kid. And you could see the pace, you could see the touch. You know, if you go back and watch the highlights of the tournament, I'm like, yeah, everything was there. It's not like something that happened overnight. You know, there are players that just, you know, sort of have a good tournament and then they level up. I want to say James, but James, yeah, after that World Cup, it didn't really line up for the dude. But there have been players who have a good tournament, but with Henry, it looked like it was all there. It was very raw and he went into the right environments. I think without Pep, we might not have seen this version of Messi. You've still been great.
No.
He's still been great.
Pep, Pep created this, yeah. Because Pep is the one who kind of hyper-focused how to use his talents more efficiently. And then he took that learning, that understanding, and he's now become what he's become now.
I think hanging around with or the squad that Pep created, I think removing guys like Deco, 86ing Anna von Bronckhorst, Balletti, Ronaldinho, creating a new sort of mentality and ethos, because there were a few too many party boys in that team. I still stand by the fact that it was helped by the fact that the dude was not around people who would have imprinted on his personality. Because we'll forget, football in the 2000s was a different game. It was literally a different game.
Oh, like, yeah.
Off the pitch was as crazy as people tell you stories about, I don't know, George Best and whatnot doing their thing back in the 70s. It was kind of the same culture. If you watch The Last Dance, you'll understand what Jordan was talking about. It was like niggas were literally doing cocaine, on a road trip and stuff like that. I think
that Barcelona team was full of partiers, man. Towards the end, that's why they were seeing fire, because there was so many homes. That's, you know, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
That removing that situation, removing those elements and building a new team to surround this player with the ethos that would make him one of the greatest players ever. You know, kudos to Pep, because not a lot of people would have had the ball stacks. You know, we talk about Solskjaer's sentimentality. when it comes with certain players. Why Phil Jones is still at United, I mean, injuries have been the biggest problem for him.
Yeah. The Phil Jones thing, yeah, I just want that on record for me, mostly for my brothers because they don't believe it. But if you were to have a private conversation about Phil Jones with Solskjaer, he will give you a mouthful about what he thinks about that. Because he was re-signed when Ole had no power over, mm-hmm. over all of that. So yeah, Phil Jones, I think that's the one thing that I know that as Ole agrees with the fans on this one. He needs to go. It's just that you can't because he's never played and he's on stupid wages. So yeah. But I think about like the winning culture, or at least the culture of it all, I think Ronaldo benefited from starting in that United culture because he had winners around him. Giggs, Scholes, Ferdinand had won a championship before that. Ferguson was already, that was a championship culture, at least with Ferguson, Neville, and, you know, at United as well, you know, with Ferguson as being the coach and us, you know, being a team that was, had, and he also played with Keane. I think he played with Keane for a while. He played with Van Nistelrooy for a while. So the pressure of, you know, expectations and winning and being this talent that's supposed to deliver, it was there from the beginning for him. You know, he already got that discipline and you can tell, you know, and as he got better and he became more efficient, being able to be flair and efficient at the same time. And then he has, like, you know, we were saying that Messi's, his first touch came from God. Ronaldo's ability to be in the right place at the right time, that came from God too. That awareness and that timing and that mental, like, oh, this is where I'm going to be to get a goal, to create that many chances, man. You know, people, it's not that easy to create that many chances as a winger, especially. Like, that's insane. So once he put that, you know, he was in the right place to become what he became now. So when he went to Madrid and he started doing what he was doing, it was like a player who had the answers to the test. Like, he just had the answer when he went to Madrid. Some of the goals you were scoring, you were like, this is easy for him. Like, this is so easy for him. They just need the team. It's just that he went to a team at that time when this, you know, in Real Madrid where they were just doing stupid things to try and win, you know, hiring Jose and then Jose playing anti-football just to be anti-Pep. And then they finally got Ancelotti, who kind of reset things, and then Zidane brought back a culture of winning and winning pressure games and, you know, just being able to get the most out of that team. And that I think Zidane came at the right time for his career at the end, Ancelotti and Zidane especially. Because there's one goal that I remember that Ronaldo scored against Galatasaray on the left. It was a hat-trick goal, I think, as well. Mm. He came in on the left, step over, then three defenders around him. He missed them all, finished with his left foot on the other side of the post. I was like, that's insane. Insane. You know, and it was a year where he was on fire as well. So, you know, that when he was in Spain, you were here, he had already had habits and the mentality of winning that were already instilled with him at United. And he just needed a coach in a football culture that matched what he was on. And over time, they eventually got it right around him, you know. And credit to Zidane, who Zidane knew exactly how to use it. That's why they play that 4-4-2, you know, with him and Benzema as the strikers. You know, Zidane understood how to get the most out of him, how to use him the right way, you know. And it came at the right time for him. It was the perfect person to come for him because he had went through so many years of just very so much dysfunction in that team. But it's like it's a very funny thing about just having the right culture at the right time, because both of them, because Ronaldo is older than the Messi, right? Ronaldo got, it was around 21 22 when Ronaldo started blossoming, and it was also around 21 20 when Messi got Pep, and that's when he started blossoming. And their careers have kind of, you know, dovetailed and kind of been now parallel to each other and running. Just, there's so many stories when you go past and like these stories just, they match each other in so many ways and they're tied together for life, man. Two of the greatest of all time.
Mm. Well, you know, it's kind of weird for people who became conscious of football, during Messi and Ronaldo's height. Because I don't think if you pick a side, like I don't really have a side. Like, you know, it's to me, these guys are like expensive alcohol. I don't really care what color it is. It's just, can I just enjoy it? Like, you know, let's drink. It's like wine and gin. It works. Not together, but it works. But it's like people became conscious of them during their height, and then seeing it as a rivalry, then don't appreciate. I don't really care what side you pick, but just appreciate the game that the other has. Because there's no contest here. There's never going to be a poll. I know FIFA did that best player of the century thing and gave it to, I think it was Pele, and Maradona was pissed about it. And I was like, dope. You know, it's going to happen again. I'm pretty sure it's going to happen again. And one of those two are going to be in the conversation for that. But this whole Messi versus Ronaldo thing, I never understood it. I'm like, can y'all not just enjoy these niggas' game? Can you just not enjoy watching them play? Like, yo, these guys are in their 30s now. Like, they've got at best 5 years left at the very most. Depending on who wants to, you know, take the nod first. We've got 5 years left of these guys. And now they're pretty much playing in farmers leagues because, yeah, I'm only going to watch, you know, Liga games because Messi's there. In every other game for me, not about it. Serie A has always been the league of the old men. It's getting better now. Like, it's getting more tactical now with younger managers and younger players. And the way Mancini has really been loving the youth system in Italy and reviving the whole, you know, national team thing. It's a league to watch, but not really where I'm going to put my money. But to watch them play, still being as efficient as they were, you gotta respect that. You gotta enjoy it. I always laugh when I see those fan accounts, CR7 fan accounts. I remember when Messi's moved to PSG, and then the CR7 fan account said there will never be a greater opening ceremony or introductory ceremony than Ronaldo's at the Bernabeu. Like, who gives a shit, man? Who gives a shit? Like, we're going to see Neymar, Messi, Mbappe. Like, regardless of where you stand, that's going to be exciting as hell. And if they meet in the Champions League, even better, it's going to be like, yo, bro. Yeah.
People, man, I think football, you know, sports always needs a rivalry, you know, like sports, the narratives for the debates, for the interest of it, to make it more entertaining, it always needs a rivalry. Otherwise, it's not WWE.
But you know, niggas gotta grow the fuck up, man. Like, shit. Like, you can have rival teams. Like, I will never like Chelsea. No, like Liverpool. But yeah, that's rival, not players. Like, I can still respect the players that
for players.
Yeah.
I've always found player rivalry to be weird. Like, what are we doing? Like, but with, you know, I think, you know, with them, it was just bound to happen because they were one-upping each other so many times, man. So many times, the entire time. Like, this whole decade, I think it's been a story of them one-upping each other. You know, like I said, you know, Messi scored 91 goals, and then Ronaldo then went on the next 3 years, scored 50 goals, whatever. Won a Champions League, won something, won a Ballon d'Or, won another Ballon d'Or, won another Champions League. Like, you know, like, that's crazy, man. You know, and then Messi won another one in 2018. You know, to take his title or whatever. And, you know, it's, and I think that the best, you know, example of this was, and for me, the greatest game maybe I've ever seen. The 2-2 draw, the Nou Camp. I don't remember what year it was. Maybe 2012. And, you know, I'll always remember it was a year where, at least that was the year when Messi was going off. Like, Messi was going crazy. And Ronaldo was also going crazy that year as well. And, you know, Messi scored this, you know, Ronaldo opened the scoring, I believe, on a tap-in or something like that. And then, you know, Messi equalized. And then Messi scored a free kick, an insane free kick. And then Ronaldo quieted the crowd like 20 minutes later. And, you know, it's like a graphic of both of them. And it just says the scoreline 2-2, Ronaldo, Messi, Ronaldo, Ronaldo. And I was just like, you had to watch the game to know exactly what it was like to see that. Like, we used to dream about, you know, just the game. Cause remember, up until that point, the El Clasicos, it was kind of one-sided a little bit, you know? Like, for a few years, it was like one side was getting it, Messi, you know, Barcelona was dominating. And then there was a year Mourinho won, and then there was a year Messi, you know, won again. And that was the time where both teams were kind of like at the end of their cycles. Like Real Madrid was relying on Ronaldo a little bit more than Messi. You know, was in a Barcelona team that was also relying on him a lot more as well. So these two were literally carrying their teams at the time, I believe. And it was this game where they were literally going blow for blow. Man, it was the first time I'd seen that in a football game. Like, you know, I've seen Henry and Van Nistelrooy really not live up to the thing. I'd seen, you know, Shevchenko and Henry or whatever. So many different battles that never quite lived up to expectations. But this one was two stars literally going back and forth. And it's the first time I'd seen that in football. In like ever, man. For me, at least, it's the first time I'd ever seen that in football. You see that in NBA. You see that in NFL. Two quarterbacks going back and forth. Two great players in the NBA going back and forth. But in soccer, you rarely see it, man. You rarely see it. And that day, man, it just happened to be the best players in the world.
Yeah. Is that, you're actually right. I'm trying to remember of two stars in a league that went at it that I can remember, to be honest, in football. And I can't, like, I'm trying to think of the Prem. I can't really think of when we had two outstanding. Okay, there was the whole Gerard Lampard Scholes situation, but that was never really a contest between any of them. Because they're all very different players. I mean, Scholes is probably closer to Gerrard than to Lampard, and vice versa. But yeah, to get a game where they meet and then they literally trade blows, it's rare. Mm. It's
rare,
it's,
man.
It's very rare.
It is rare. Like these two, their story, you know, when it gets told, I hope somebody does a very good story on them one day. But it, you know, it's something that in football, it's so crazy that you will never see it again.
Mm.
You won't see two players. Not even like they reached heights that I don't think we'll be able to understand until years after they retired, man. Because, you know, the things that they were doing to score 50 goals 5 consecutive years or whatever it was that Ronaldo did is insane. Ronaldo has more goals than games played at Real Madrid, I believe. I think that's what it is.
I think I heard that too, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, and that's insane.
Ridiculous.
Like Messi, you know, like Messi has scored 30 plus goals for I don't know how long, you know, and 10 plus assists as well for I don't know how long. You know, like it is absolutely insane what these guys have done since they broke onto the scene, you know? And there's so much so that they warped what we expect 21-year-olds are supposed to look like.
Exactly.
Like, we think 21-year-olds are supposed to look like them. No. No, they're not, man.
Nah.
No. No. Like, you know, people are complaining about so many, like, 21-year-olds are like, oh, he's not as whatever. I'm like, yo, all of them, from Rashford to Havertz to Sancho, you know, whoever's sub 25 right now, are if they're good and they have a great output right now, they're exactly where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't compare to Ronaldo and Messi. You got to get those out. Like Mbappe is the perfect example. He's right exactly where he's supposed to be, man. That's exactly where he's supposed to be. Could he have been better? Yeah, if he was in a different circumstance. That's why he's trying to get out of PSG and go to Madrid. But he, you know, he's exactly where he's supposed to be right now, talent-wise, career-wise, you know? Especially talent-wise. Messi and Ronaldo, man, those are aliens, man. Like we're saying, these guys, what they were able to do between the ages of 19 and 23 is incredible. These ones were household names and also multiple Ballon d'Or winners by, although maybe not Ronaldo, because Ronaldo left at 23. But, you know, by 25, a lot of them had won multiple Ballon d'Ors. You know, like, they were the best of the best in the world. Like, it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, absolutely crazy.
I saw people that Messi and Ronaldo are the exception of the rule. Like, you're not going to find 21-year-olds doing what they're doing, and don't expect it of them, because I don't think that's fair. Because the football has changed in so many ways that you can't really expect them to be doing what Messi and Ronaldo did. And again, you can't really expect 21-year-olds who are learning the game to try and match people who were writing a new script for the entire game as they went along. So there was no plan to this. People had to adapt to these two behemoths, and it affected football. They don't, like, I was talking about, there's a ripple effect that happened with those two guys. the 4-3-3 came back in style real quick, because one, that was the only way you could defend against Barcelona. At United, when Ronaldo was going off, players started playing the low block more often, because when you put two banks of four, it's going to be a lot harder to get for Ronaldo to get through. He's going to get through, but I mean, it's going to be a lot harder. So for you, for young players to then come into the game, I'm not saying there's not going to be an exceptional young player. There definitely is, but yeah, some of the stuff now is kind of written in stone. It's gonna take an exceptional talent that will be on that level consistently for over that period of time to be like, yeah. But don't expect it from everyone. People blossom at different phases. I always give the Drogba example. The Drogba peaked in his late 20s. Like, Drogba became the Drogba that we all know in his late 20s. Before that, there was no 21-year-old Drogba tearing up
leagues. Yeah, he was like 28 when he came to Chelsea, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then he then became the player that we were like, okay, all right. But, you know, it's different for everyone. Like, peaks, I think one thing I actually like about younger football watchers or the young generation watching football is that they understand how peaks happen. They understand that, yeah, you know, some players are going to reach their peak. That's when you see pundits like Anana, Graham Souness, and whatnot, when they don't understand their version of what football is steeped in the time they played it, not in where football is now. And young players, kind of young supporters or people who kind of pay attention to the game, kind of get it now. But yeah, no, like an example is the whole Pogba situation, which I need to thank Michael Richards for bringing that out, for being like, yeah, you guys are calling Kane a saint, but he's not coming to practice. Pogba never ever said he doesn't want to play for United, and I think Gary Neville was like, I know, but his agent talks a lot, and his agent is an extension of the player. And I'm like, dude, Raiola has been talking nonsense for years. Be it Haaland, be it whoever, any player he represents, he just says what he wants. I think his actions are those players that kind of demonstrate, what's going on. And I think the young generation of footballers, a number of people I saw on Twitter, because you just click on Pogba, the hashtag, and you see, some of them look level-headed, to be honest. I mean, yeah, like, he has not said he doesn't want to be there. If he didn't want, he would have put in a transfer request and would have left. United aren't going to sit him for the season, you know, let him go for free. They know they've got a chance to convince him. And this commentary, it was strange for me, because I'm used to Twitter being a shitstorm, just being utter a cesspool of people ragging on the guy. Of course, there was the crew, the usual crew, who went after an Saka and etc. after the Euros. But for most people, I was actually pretty impressed. Like, oh, okay. Some people are actually giving me angles. I was like, yeah, oh shit, nigga. I had not thought of that. Not that I should have, but yeah. Like, damn, okay, that's pretty smart. So I think they get now that players come to their peaks, like the pressure that's not on Sancho, for example. People get he's coming from the Bundesliga. It's going to take time for him to get like the game under his feet. Even when he came on, people were happy, but they were like, we're not expecting you to light it up. Like, I think the Donny van de Beek situation is something that was, again, and I'm just speaking for United fans, and they're like, yeah, he didn't play, not because he's not good enough, probably physique-wise, he's not there yet. And yeah, he can sit for a season and he can get to where he needs to get to. It doesn't really matter, because they can keep you playing for longer if you're not injury-prone. And I'm looking at Twitter, I'm like, is this the same Twitter or am I on a different app? Like, the fuck is going on? And I think
you got to pick your place on Twitter.
Yeah, and I think with players peaking and stuff like that, some Chelsea fans even reminded people that Pogba's a 10-assist, 10-goal kind of player. 10 goals at the best, but he'll give you assists. And for him to give you 4 on the opening day, and then for these Souness and Keane and Neville niggas not to be like, you know, give, especially Souness, I don't really understand what his deal with Pogba is. Not to be like, yeah, you know, and I remember Souness is responsible. This is what we expect from a $100 million player. Jack Grealish is $100 million, and he stunk it up. Like, he might have only played twice, but he stunk it up. When you get young players,
the expectations that the old people, not the old people, the old players, the legends have that come on punditry is just, it's outdated. It's really outdated. And, you know, just people like Souness, it's just the, what Sky has become, at least in my opinion, is just they're trying to be ESPN. You know, like ESPN is this, you know, the sports entertainment, and they're trying to bring that to football and on Sky, and they've been doing it for a while. You know, like you can't, like you got Souness on there. He doesn't really, like, come on, man. People, you know, it's the expectations that they have for certain players is not consistent. Like at all, you know, like at all. They're the ones who fuel this whole idea that certain players should be excellent at this young age and before they hit their peak years. And a lot of young fans are saying, no, peak years are like 25 to 28. That's when people peak. So if you're not there yet, then it's all right. It's good. Like, you know, there's more football analysis and understanding that happens on Twitter than happens on Sky Sports. Especially with those guys. No, man, come on. Like the Kane situation, man. Like, come on, man. He is handling this very unprofessionally. Like, I need to side note to this for a while, because I've been preaching this in the group chats for a while. But hey, man, he is handling this unprofessionally. And it's all because, listen, man, nobody asked him or forced him to sign that contract. No one forced him to sign that contract. He should have known who he was dealing with, who this owner he was dealing with is, what he's done with the money. They were building a stadium at that point, I believe. There was plans for it. What did you think was going to happen? Why would you lock yourself in for 6 years? Who asked you to do that? Like, come on. It's 4 or 3 with the option of 4, or 4 with the option of 5. You should not have locked yourself in like that.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? So now he's trying to get out of it, and he's doing it in the most unprofessional way. He goes on an interview with Gary Neville before the season ends, whatever it was, whenever the timing was. I don't know if that's when it happened. But he goes on an interview that basically is, I want to leave, I want to win trophies. And then refuses to train, and then makes up some excuse. And then now, come on, man. Don't even bring Pogba into this, because it's a whole thing about just using Pogba. Any other player, if that was Wayne Rooney, that happened. Like, is he getting the same treatment? If that's Wayne Rooney, Beckham. Is that David Beckham? If that Beckham was doing that to United, what treatment would he be getting by the media? Like if it was any other player, not a black player, just if it was any other player, do they get the same treatment? Like Jordan Henderson doing that, is he going to be looked at the same way, trying to force his way out of Liverpool? Are fans going to, come on, man, this is ridiculous. This is crazy, man. We need to be able, like Sky especially, I just feel like they fold the agenda. They fold the analysis and the impartial and the objectivity, and they put agendas forward. And one of them is really just the insane expectations that they put, or at least not the insane, but like not only insane, but like misinformed takes as well that they put out there about where a young player should be and what he should do and what they need to be, you know, what they need to be doing at certain ages. And it's like, no, you know, like, come on, man, what are we talking about? You know, these are young players at a certain level that right now are where they're supposed to be. Like with Greenwood, like how they treated Greenwood and how he was aspiring, all that. And I gotta give credit to Ole, because he protected Greenwood last year during a period where, you know, he had played him. There was a time where Greenwood wasn't playing and he kept saying there was a knock. I don't think there was a knock. I think they were giving him time off the field to kind of manage his media time, because the media was going at him and he had just lost his friends, and there were all these heaping expectations on him based on what he had done last season. It's like a prime example. There was all these, you know, like just all this noise going around about him, and the papers were going at him about stupid things. And, you know, Ole just put him out of the team, didn't even play him for like a month or whatever. Said he has a knock, he's not ready yet, he's working his way back to fitness. And I think he was to an extent. But I think it was also just a lot of protecting, because, you know, as it's happening to Mbappe now, you know, where there's all this pressure and all this expectation saying you've got to be this and you've got to be that, you've got to be this. And, you know, sometimes you need to protect young players and be like, hey, man, listen, we got to protect you from the media, from the pressure. These guys are where they're supposed to be. Like, Ole does nothing but praise Greenwood, right? He never really gets at him. He never allows the media to feed off some sort of negativity about Greenwood. Any of the players, really. But he has done very well in protecting Greenwood and the level expectations around Greenwood. And that's the kind of I think that's the kind of attitude a lot of pundits should use. I think some players, some people do, you know, like Rio, you know, sometimes Henri comes on and commentates very well, and a few others. But we have to have those kind of, we need to kind of subvert our expectations for young players, because these two guys, what Messi and Ronaldo did, man, we can't use that. Like, people see Mbappe doing crazy things and then they start thinking Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's like, yo, chill. Yes. Chill, man. He hasn't had the right environment and the culture to now have those expectations heaped on him. Mm-hmm. You know, but if he now goes to one of those cultures and he goes to those places, he now, same with Haaland and anyone who you consider, you know, even Neymar. Like, one would even argue that Neymar would be taken more seriously if he had gone to a very serious culture. When he was at Barcelona and he was in that winning culture, people were taking him serious. Yeah. He went to PSG and he's been clowning. He's been the best player in the world for how long? Mm. But people didn't take him serious because it's a clown organization that he works for. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a farmers league, man. And I totally get you. It's the thing that it's what the Graham Sunnises, the Roy Keynes and whatnot stress over is the transfer fees. And what they fail to understand is that football is now like stocks and trading. You invest in potential and talent. It might not come out the way you want. It might sometimes. But in that time, you recoup your investment into stuff like merchandising, imaging rights, and whatnot. So in a business perspective, it makes sense. The money might look big to them because they played an era where players were going for 100,000. And you know what? I honestly would have loved to be the day when players were being transferred for those kind of fees. But the game has gotten global. And it's gotten global to a point that football is the most... I think I remember watching some report, and it's $58 billion is just the European League alone. Like, it's insane. Yeah. It's an insane amount of money. So it's become, you know, I wouldn't call it to the level of stocks and trading and speculation in proper, but it's close to that. So when you're buying a young player or buying someone of that ilk who's going for a high price, like a Sancho, who went for north of $50 million.
You're buying for the potential that he could become something great.
Yeah, it's now down to the club to put the environment around him to make a return on that investment. And I don't think they speak about that too much, because I remember Roy Keane saying these players threw Mourinho under the bus. And I'm like, bruv, he agitated the best player on the team in Pogba for no reason. For absolutely no reason, just so he could have a pissing contest.
Jose's a mercenary because he did the same shit at Real Madrid.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. And it's the hard man style coach that the Sunnises and Nana
Keane. He doesn't fit. Yeah, it doesn't fit in today's league, man. Mm-hmm. You need the Oles. You need the Peps. Peps mm-hmm. raps to his people. Klopp mm-hmm. as well, man. He talks Tuchel. You mm. see how these ones are in training, Ole. They're all like that. You need players like that. That's why Ancelotti had somewhat success in this era. Because Ancelotti's always been that kind of a coach. Mm. You can't get away with all this other shit. You gotta be, or at least you have to be in an environment where the people respond to your shit. I think Jose went to teams that were full of youngsters and modern kids. Like that's why I think Italy, he's probably gonna do way better in Italy, because I think there's more of these type of professionals there. We'll see. This is just a theory. But in the way he was at least with Real Madrid, there was, you know, and then the Manchester United as well, and towards the end there were Chelsea. It was all the same kind of players, really. The same kind of superstars. The young players, modern superstars, modern stars, modern player. They don't adapt to his style. You can't be that anymore.
Yeah. And even if you look at the managerial careers of all the Sky pundits, Carragher's the only one I know who hasn't tried, but never went to Valencia and stunk it up. Man.
We listen to these people. Eh?
Roy Keane went to Sunderland, I think it was, for a little bit. It didn't really work out for him. Soon as tried some shit way back, it didn't really work. You might have been the best players or some of the best players of your era in the league, but translating that to understanding how these players are recruited. Because remember, when you're playing,
come on and talk football, bro.
Yeah, come and talk players who played in your position.
Analyze the game. Tell us about this one's positioning. Don't tell us about your fucking takes. Your takes. What the fuck want to hear your takes?
Yeah, no, hot takes don't work in football because, unfortunately, football fans are very intelligent. I will say that. They do understand that football is just not black and white. And more so now when people are trying to understand tactics, you need people who can then convey that kind of thing. You know, Neville used to do a really good job of it before he started dipping into this whole hot take nonsense.
Politics.
But it's now really at a point where you're like,
dude, Roy Keane is a very intelligent person.
Yeah.
Like, people forget. People just think he's all tackles and saying dramatic shit. The guy was very good, man. Mm-hmm. He was a very technically sound midfielder. an intelligent player, very intelligent player, an elite midfielder, man, one of the all-time greats. It's not, there's no cap, man. He was a very, very good midfielder, world-class, you could say. So he's, you could, I don't know, maybe he doesn't want to, maybe he's, I don't know what the deal is, but you should be able to get more analysis out of him than him just saying controversial shit. Like, how the hell is Graham Souness still doing Sky just to be a hot take and whatnot? Gee, dude, it's so annoying. At least on BT Sport and Ferdinand do analysis, man. They got Scholes up there doing analysis and shit. I'm like, this is what I want to pay to see, man. And then Scholes starts rapping and giving his takes about things. And I get it. They got to do that for the hits and stuff. But, like, the thing I love about American sports is the analysis that happens during and afterwards. It is brilliant. Afterwards, after an NFL game, there's 10 shows or whatnot of owns just dissecting.
NFL is different because NFL TV.
No, itself, I get it.
Yeah, it's analysis.
I get it. Yeah, it's analysis in and of itself. I get that. There's replays and all that. But what I'm saying is, like, even NBA. Okay, NBA is a perfect example. NBA is like, what's it called? Like, inside the NBA, Kenny Smith and them. Yeah, sure. They chat. They do a whole bunch of wacky stuff in and out of that. But they still have segments. And during the playoffs, they'll bring in somebody like Draymond Green, a player who's playing right now, to give expert analysis on a playoff game or a playoff series or game or whatever. And you'll be breaking it down. And then you'll be showing, like, just how the modern athlete thinks is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, you need more people on there that show how the modern athlete thinks and what they're seeing. And what a player, like, people want to hear that when, you know, when we now have the technology and the access to doing this shit. And Sky, I feel like, look, man, if you're going to be campy about it, at least follow ESPN's thing. ESPN still do great basketball analysis with Jalen Rose and them and Tim Legler afterwards in the graveyard shift. Like, they do and some analysis where owns can go on and look and be like, oh, that's okay. That's what they're thinking. Like, BT Sport do it, BBC's do it. I don't know why Sky Sports, like, what are we doing with Sky? What do you think on a Ferdinand go to went to BT, bro? Like, you think that just, you think these niggas stop working there for whatever? They went there for a reason, bro, because it's a joke at Sky, dog.
Yeah,
even ITV. True. Like, remember in the Euros, where after the Switzerland game, they spent 2 minutes talking about Pogba's mistake and Pogba's attitude. And that Vieira on there saying Pogba's not committed to the team and whatnot. He doesn't give himself to the team. And you're like, my guy, they won a World Cup like 4 chocolate years ago. What are we talking about?
Dude, recency bias and stuff. With Sky, I can say this. Sky mixed up what Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman do with analysis, trying to bring that in. You know, Stephen A. analysis Zora. Well, do you know, let's look at the numbers, let's look at the game. It's kind of a Skip and Shannon thing all the time. And you're like, I don't really pick sides. Like, we want.
They're not analysts, man. Those are journalists.
Yeah, analyze the game a little bit more. So when you bring in these ex-footballers, I think it should be managers, because I like watching La Liga TV.
Yes.
Because La Liga, you get what's his name? Oh, I forgot the dude's name. He used to play for Barcelona. Played Gasca Mendieta. Like, literally talking. I remember when I watched it, then talking some sense. Like, trying to understand the game. You know, he might not be able to elucidate in the levels of coaches and stuff, but you then get an impression of, oh yeah, this actually knows what he's talking about. I did not see this. Or I didn't see that. With Sky, it's just now just a pissing contest. You're just like, yeah, okay. And certain narratives are good to carry on. Like, I remember when you're telling me about, what was it when backing your take? Like, well, what does Stephen A. do? Or what
oh, take, yeah, take integrity. Yeah,
take integrity, yeah. Where you're like, yeah, no, these guys actually make a hot take and they have to back it up. And it doesn't matter whether the heel or the face, they just have to back it up. And I think those guys are now doing it more and more and more now to sound a little bit more controversial. And our guys like Anna Michael Richards are stirring the pot because they're now bringing actual comparisons to be like, yeah, you won't, like, even Skip Bayless says sometimes, yo, like, LeBron was ridiculously good. Like, it was real objective. We'd be like, oh, yeah, even Skip will say it or whatever. But with the guys, this guy, it's kind of like, nah, they don't see it that way. And the way they shut down Michael Richards is what pissed me off. When we talk about Chelsea and Liverpool, what, I'm like, nah, you guys are literally giving Kane a free pass. You've been bragging on Pogba for a very long time, saying it's a $100 million play. This is what we expect from a $100 million play. Dude, that's 4 assists on opening day. And they weren't just, you know, tap and score. The pass to Greenwood. The pass to, Bruno. Guys.
There's one commentator that literally said one of the passes that there's a lot of players who get that wrong. you know, and Pogba just tried it one time. Like, it's, nah, man, I just hope, you know, I mean, we're in a bit of a tangent here, but I just hope that, you know, hey, they figure, you know, I don't think they will. I think they're going to continue going down this road until somebody goes and for all complains for real that they're doing bullshit. But for now, I'm just going to go continue just watching BT Sports and all those other analysis. There's not that many, you know, that do great analysis, but every now and then you find some good ones, you know. But one thing I wanted to like get on before we close it out is what was the moment? I know you had moments. What's the moment between either one of them, Messi or Ronaldo, that way that had you like, fuck you.
I'm trying to pick well, we've been playing against each other in the game.
No, like when one of them kind of was played against the team that you're rooting for, whatever, and you're just like, fuck you, motherfucker. You had to be great. You had to be great today. You had to be. You couldn't suck. You couldn't be bad just one time. Like, what was, I know you have a few. With me, I have plenty.
Well, for Ronaldo, for Messi, I think it's the game against Athletic Bilbao when he made four defenders look like cones. Now, for those listening, I love Athletic Bilbao. It's one of those teams that I just vibe with. I watch their games regularly. It's just an interesting sort of case study of just getting talent from a specific region. I know Sociedad did that in the past, but then they just switched to whoever can come. But I kind of like the way they bring up talent. It's that game where, you know, they were playing. Well, I think it was the game after Bilbao had beaten them, or the season after Bilbao had beaten them in the Supercopa. Don't remember who scored that crazy goal. Striker number two, Aduriz. When Aduriz did this insane header, and then the next season, that season, Yacho, Messi just made four defenders look like cones. Like, Van, you know, bodies hit the floor. Like, the bodies were. I was like, the fuck is going on? that really, really, really cheesed me. I was like, you know, fuck this nigga. Like, you could at least respect the team. I know you could have passed it off. You know, two dribbles or two defenders. But, bruv, like, Ronaldo, it would have to be... Oh, Ronaldo, there are a number. There are a number of games that I hated Ronaldo. The one when he came back to United was... I didn't play exceptionally well, but he was still Cristiano Ronaldo. It's kind of like bumping into your ex. Like, you know, walking around and you bump into your ex with another dude and you're like... They're looking good footy. And you're like, I can't even hate. So right. Every time we played against him, for Ronaldo, it's always stung. Every time we played against him, I can't pick out a specific one for a game, but closer to my heart is United. Every time we met them, even when we played against Juventus, still kind of stung in a weird way, even though he wasn't, you know, doing well. Mm. And you?
With Messi, It's the 08-09 Champions League when you know when he climbed up for the header. Because in that game, even though they were outplaying us, they were still at 1-0. You still have hope that we can United. If you just create a chance out of nowhere, we're back in this United way. And then he climbed up the ladder for that header. I was like, you just had to be great, didn't you? You had to be great. What's wrong with you? You couldn't, like, I was just like, wow, no boss did it this way. You couldn't, just take the night off. No, he had to become great and all of a sudden get, you know, hops and hit the ball in. And it was like, he's the shortest guy in the entire, like, in whatever radius you want to call it. It was Van der Sar, Vidic, and Ferdinand around him, and he gets the header that goes in. Like, guys, you know? Yes. And then with Ronaldo, I think it was the first time he brought out that karma, because that item at the Bernabeu, at the Camp Nou. Yeah, yeah. Oh. Camp Nou. When they won. I remember that. Yeah, because that was the season that they scored 100 points. That was also the season where Mourinho's anti-Barcelona was at the, like, he was, The dark side, my guy. The dark side of the force was strong that year. And the entire team just kind of was literally the dark side of the force. And so when they went to the camp now was quiet, bruh. And he went to the corner and he said, I got this. Me. Calm down. Just calm down. Mm. And the finish was immaculate. The goal they scored was immaculate too. The ball, the touch from Ozil, the ball across, the finish from Ronaldo. Woo, woo.
Yeah.
I remember that moment when he was celebrating. The fans were booed. The fans were quiet. Mm. They were jeering. And he was just saying, calm. I was just going.
This motherfucker. It's difficult to silence 100,000 people in the camp now. It's difficult.
Bruh, they were quiet. Yeah. They were quiet.
It's also difficult for them not to have your respect, because sometimes they do respect players. I remember Dino standing ovation at the Bernabeu. I remember them, you know, giving not Figo, because Figo, there was that pig incident. They never loved that nigga after that. But every time old Ronaldo came, they showed him respect. But Cristiano made himself the villain in Catalonia. And yeah, that moment best epitomized this. shut the fuck up.
Because the Messi fans are more, what's the word? They're worse there in Barcelona than they are in the rest of the world.
Mm.
They're the worst there. They view him as God. So Cristiano was automatically the enemy. There was no, they're respectable rivals. It's the same thing with Madrid fans as well. You know, it's the same thing with them. So with them, when he scored that goal and he beat them at Camp Nou, that, you know, it was just, phew. You could hear a pin drop. That's how quiet it was. And I was just like, fuck you, motherfucker. You just, damn it. I couldn't even hate, man. Like, I hated it so much because it was so good. The goal, the celebration, the timing, it was another Mourinho masterclass as well. Like, he really just got in their faces. And so, I remember that. Those are my two moments between the two of them. It's just that's when they were the greatest. Like those two moments for me are like they're like defining moments where you just sat there and you're like you have to respect it. You have to respect it, man. You may not like it, but you have to respect it. And those are the moments where I was just like, fuck you, you motherfucker. That's it, man. That's how they are, man. And it's really a privilege to have watched both of them play. To be able to see this in my lifetime, because you know we weren't here for you know Pele and Maradona, you know, so we didn't get to see that going on. We weren't here for Van Basten, you know, Cruyff, you know, we didn't get to see all that, Beckenbauer, Müller, you know, all these different players, you know, George Weah, the same, I don't know who he was battling at that time. We didn't really see that much of Brazilian Ronaldo as well, going back and forth with Zidane. Between 98 and 2000, we didn't really get to see that much. So to be able to have seen these two at the height, you know, and to be able to now go 30 years from now, to be able to tell kids like, let me tell you a story about two players that, you know, like, you know, it's for, you know, for NFL, for American fans, for people who watch North American sports predominantly, this is the people who watch Brady and Manning from start to finish.
Yeah.
Or Marino, from start to finish. It's people, you know, who got to see Jordan go up against, you know, but Jordan didn't have any rivals, but Magic and Bird. People got to see Magic and Bird in the 80s. That's what this shit is, man. You know, going all the way back in the NBA to Russell and Wilt. Well, people got to see that. That's what this shit is for football fans, man. People got to see gods, you know, hit the peak at the same time and go back and forth for 10 years and rewrite the game and how fans view it and how it's played and what we expect and just literally rewrite football, man. You know, like they've one way or another, football has in the last 10 years has been, you know, the evolution of it has been kind of brought on by them and the heights that they've reached. And now it is what it is in part, you know, not large part, but quite a large chunk of it at least is because of them.
Right. And when they, when Netflix does buy the rights to do this, because we were at work, we were reading No Rules Rules Netflix's culture, and I got a feeling that they're gonna go and buy this.
I want a Last Dance. I want all their coaches, all their players, not all their players, but I want all their coaches. I want family members. I want a Last Dance thing, or even like Adam, like with, you know, how Magic and what's his name, and Isaiah sat down and talked and stuff. Yeah. I want one of those. They want to do that, a conversation.
I want both. Like, they both be special. So give me two seasons. I don't want this one season of The Last Dance where there was so much stuff that probably was left out. Give me two seasons back to back. So I know, right? You know, I'm going to satisfy my urge.
That's what we need, man.
They shouldn't make the mistake of not including guys like Rafael Hernandez, Dermot Carrigan, everyone on Twitter who was around, who gave us insights on Messi, who reminded us of how great this guy was.
Journalists, yeah, journalists. The ones who write the stories, The right journalists, not the right these journalists. Wrong ones.
No, don't go out and get, you know, Gary Lineker or whatever. Like, we don't give a shit. I mean, go and get people who are reporting on him on the spot. Get Bartomeu if you can. Like, I really want that guy's perspective of how he fucked this up, because pretty much he fucked all of this up.
How Russell, do you give that guy a contract like that, bro?
Russell, get
and who's want to blame Messi about that, man? I pinch my ass. Somebody offers you a $600,000 contract. You fucking signed that shit. What the fuck are you talking about? Take, hey, my money? No, it's not my money. You sign it. Sign it, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, bro. Generational wealth comes along once. You don't say no to that.
Yeah, it's good money.
Take the money. As Dennis Schroeder. Dennis Schroeder tell you, man, take the money.
Yeah, no, it's enough. Always take the money. Mid-level exception of the Celtics. And I was like, nigga.
You'll never get that money again, man. Yeah. That's,
Joel.
You know, but that's basketball.
Yeah. I was even going to say, Joel has 2 years left on his deal and he signed a Supermax. $200 million. I'm not turning that down. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. I'm going to do a Gilbert Arenas, where they will still pay me while I'm out. I'll be one of the best
players. Yeah, Barcelona still owe him money. They're broken shit and they still owe him like $32 million. Yes. I love that club. I would die for that club. They got to pay me my money, though. We signed the contract. Look, hey, man, it's the same thing. People say this about Kobe when he signed a contract, like he should take less money and help the team. Where? I am the greatest. I deserve this money. I earn this money. I can't earn this money. No, I'm the greatest. This guy gave me the money. What am I going to sit there and say, nah, it's too much money? Imagine that. Somebody says there's a contract offering you. I bet. $500,000 a week.
It's kind of like, what's it called? The Golden State Warriors. The owners are like, yeah, we'll pay the luxury tax. We don't give a crap. We just want these guys to get the money they deserve, because these guys have made us household. They've made us literally hundreds of millions.
Yeah, I think Brooklyn is doing the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
So guys, we're going to extend all of them. People have this moral compass of when it comes to money, bro. Like, these billionaires don't have money to spend.
Like, Steve Ballmer is a billionaire, is the top 20 richest men in the world. He will pay their luxury tax without even freaking blinking. So don't worry about it. Just give them the money they deserve. Let them collect the bag. End of story.
Yeah, but anyway, back to your point. Yeah, we do need a documentary. It's a full on 10 episode.
Two seasons.
Documentary.
I want one season. I want two seasons. If Netflix, if you're listening, I want two seasons. 15 episodes each. There's enough content. I know. I live through it. There is enough content. So don't
cheat
us and give us, you know, The Last Dance. And I know Michael probably was like, hey, nah, fuck that shit. Let's pull some shit out. No. This one, you got to make it right. And at the end, the season finale, get these two motherfuckers in a room, get them refreshments, 3-hour conversation. Let them go down memory lane. I don't give a shit. I'll watch that.
Life's they got to go through the rival, man. They just got to go through it and sit together like Keenan and Thing did.
And Vieira.
That's what they got to do. Keenan and Vieira. They may not have to do a series. They just need to do like a two-part episode thing, 2 40-minute, 50-minute episodes, like what Keenan Vieira did.
Don't cheap it out.
Rap.
We got enough highlights. We got enough Ballon d'Ors here. There's finale, the conversation. Let them sit in the room. They got time. Like, they'll be retired at that point. They have got time to measure dicks.
We want this.
And bring all their trophies. Talk to the clubs. Let the niggas see the glitter in the background. Here's my rant. Sorry, here's my TED talk.
Yeah, no, we need it. We definitely need it. I hope somebody, like Netflix is going in with these documentaries. I need them to tap into soccer, football, I need them to tap in. And this is the one they need to tap into. I swear, man, I will at them all day, every day. You know, not like that, but you know, I will at them every day to be like, find somebody to get the rights to this and do it. As soon as you can, do it. This is the shit that drives your thing to the trillionaire, gazillionaire valuation. This is the one. This is the thing here. Because those two, whoever gets those rights, man, to any of their stories, I think they have a miss, or they have a Steph one, but they have a Steph story coming out. I forgot about that. But whoever gets the rights to that, man, that's the story that we need to hear, because I think people need to be able to tell the story of how these guys were pushing each other behind the scenes and what was going on in the locker room, some of the conversations that were happening. Like the conversation, I believe the rumored conversation that happened in Enrique's first year between Messi and Xavi, because Messi was kind of just lollygagging through the first part of that year. And then you had like a stern talking to for one game from Xavi saying, hey, you want to win the Ballon d'Or again or whatever? Cristiano's winning and you want to win it or whatever? And then, you know, that kind of, after that, the whole thing, you know, Messi kind of turned his season around and started being more engaged. But there's stories, you're right. There's stories behind the scenes, man. We need to hear this shit, man. We need to hear it. We need to hear all of it, man. Get the right people. Don't get the wrong ones. Get the right people to talk about this.
Make sure that we get you get the rights before Disney Plus. Now, Netflix, if you're listening, I think I appreciate sure you have scouts out there listening when your name is mentioned. I know you got an AI running, you know, script all over the internet. We're waiting for the time your name is mentioned. Yeah, I know you're listening. So don't let Disney Plus get this before you. Because if Disney Plus get this, the lead you have over them is over. And remember, football is a $1 billion business. Over 1 billion people watch the World Cup. Just imagine the new signing, the new sign-on, the new accounts that will come.
You know who's going to end up getting it, bro? Amazon.
Bro, I was about to say that. Jeff Bezos is just going to pull out the check. Two pizza. Give me.
That Lex Luthor motherfucker is going to end up getting it, man. Like, he's really going to get it. I don't mind because I think I have an Amazon membership anyway. They push that on me every now and then because I'm an avid buyer of Amazon. But I think Jeff Bezos is the one who's going to end up getting it, man. Which is just,
hey,
can't
man.
Keep getting away with this.
Yeah, man. But I mean, if he gives the same treatment that he gave another Clarkson and May and Hammond when they left the BBC to be like, yeah, we're giving you a budget, just do what you want, and they get the right people to do it. Like, get actual sports journalists to consult and, you know, someone reputable to do it. I'll be happy with them, because everything they've done, like, look at Clarkson's farm, man. I never thought I'd enjoy it as much as I did. And I was like, yeah, they just gave the guy a camera and money and they're like, yeah, go make a series. If they get it, I won't be mad, but I'll prefer it went to Netflix, because after The Last Dance treatment, they know how to make things theatrical. The Last Dance made 30 for 30 look silly. Like, that is, like, ESPN 30 for 30 was the benchmark of sports documentaries. And that one just made everything look silly. I know ESPN collaborated on as well, but I mean, the scale to which they went to, ridiculous.
Even the Malice in the Palace one, you gotta watch that one, but what they did with that one as well, that was pretty good. Like, very, very good. So that's the shit that I want. That's like the benchmark now. So I want Netflix to get it, because I want them. They have to work in collaboration with somebody else, I believe. But if they do, that's the story I want them to tap into, bro. Because that's the shit that we need, dude. We need to get that story on. It's one of the greatest rivalries in sports, man. Like, it's just not just soccer. It's like in sports. It's literally like right up there, maybe top five. Maybe even top three, man. Maybe number one for me, just because I was there at the beginning. Like, we're literally there from the beginning, man. You think that's crazy? Same. Like, I can literally trust. It's not one of those things that we can, like, we go into, like, Zidane and Ronaldo and all this. Like, we were there at the beginning. When we signed Ronaldo, we were there, bro. When Messi was made his first start, I was there watching late night on La Liga TV. Yeah, we were there through the whole process, man. We've been following these guys since the beginning, and a lot of us have. And I feel like that's a story we need to get, bro. We deserve that.
Yeah, we're into that. Hey, we could talk until the cars come home, because this is Bora.
You know how it is, man.
Yeah, we'll probably see you next, probably this weekend or on Monday after all the weekend's football and some other shit that happens in people's lives. I would have very much liked to talk about the United game, but you know, bigger things come first.
We are not talking about United until week five, until we're five games in, because we're not doing that. No. We're not jinxing it, all right? Right? One game is one game, man. We go to the next game. We're not doing that this year, no.
This is more on you. Managing expectations. I like it.
Hey, it's a long season, bruh. You get ahead of yourself in the beginning when Ons aren't fit. You got to wait until the whole league is at the same level of fitness. Then we can start talking about results. Right now, it's just vibes, bruh.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just vibes. Any win is a bonus right now because you got to rack up those points. But hey, man. No United until we're 5 games in.
Right. So thank you very much for listening. We will catch you again.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Put us in the background as usual. And for those who are listening, the recommendation of today's episode, NAS, King's Disease 2. Go listen to it. Definitely. If you haven't already.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, I don't know where you've been living. I don't know what you've been doing. God bless you. Mm. Welcome back to civilization. Go listen to it.
And if you got time after that, listen to Isaiah Rashad's album. Insane.
Yes, that too. Insane. Fucking insane.
Yeah. You make time also. Hi. Staples also did some cool shit. Yeah. Peace out.
Peace.
I'm trying to figure out how to end the recording.